For the third consecutive season, the Atlanta Braves have clinched the National League East, and we're here to talk about it with you on the Batter Up Podcast, your official Atlanta Braves podcast from 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. I'm Will Pelagic, joined by Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson. Happy day after clinch day to you, Joe Patrick.
Thank you, Will. Same to you.
And happy day after clinch day to you, Caleb Johnson.
Whoop whoop.
We in the playoffs.
And I do feel like it's very much okay to be celebratory about something of this nature from the Braves' perspective, given how much adversity. You know, I said it on Twitter last night. There wasn't a team that played against a more stacked deck more admirably, I believe, than the Atlanta Braves, given the fact that you had a team that lost so much starting pitching during the regular year. You had injuries to very key members of your team, and not to even count the Freddie Freeman COVID scare that started the season, not having Nick Markakis for a while, the opt-outs beforehand. I do feel like if there's a team that galvanized itself throughout the enormity and really unforeign, or I guess the foreign nature of this 60-game season, it's the Atlanta Braves, Joe.
Yeah, you know, I keep thinking I'm very kind of proud of this team because of, like you said, everything that they've had to face. And I keep going back to Brian Snicker talked to media. I want to say it was on the 4th of July, or maybe it was the 3rd of July, the first day of essentially the spring training 2.0. And it was the day that they announced Freddie Freeman was positive for COVID. They were going to miss him. And I remember the thing I remember from that was Brian Snicker and some of the players that talked saying that the most important thing about the season was going to be adaptability. Whatever teams were able to adapt to the conditions of this kind of crazy, unprecedented season were going to be the ones that had the most success. And obviously, you need some talent along with it. And the Braves obviously have that in spades. And this team was exactly that, you know, and it wasn't necessarily just down to COVID, just down to the scheduling, the protocols of going on the road. It was the ability of this team to adapt to all the different injuries and all the different ailments that struck them. Both, obviously, we've well documented everything that's happened in the starting rotation. But even guys like Ronald Acuna missing 2 weeks, Ozzie Albies missing a month, which is half the season, you know, there were lots of disruptions to this team. You went into that opening series to start the season without either of your catchers who were sick, who's just somehow miraculously both got sick at the same time, but didn't have COVID, which is amazing. But just an amazing kind of story of this team. And especially with individuals like Freddie Freeman, a guy who, you know, obviously suffered from COVID. It was really bad and then comes around and has an MVP season. Just an incredible story. And I said it after the game. I think this is Brian Snicker's best managing job because of all of this stuff. You know, it wasn't the normal season. It wasn't just plug and play these guys, let them go out there for 162 games and let the talent take over. You know, I don't, and it's not to say that he was necessarily like micromanaging this team to victory, but it was just his general presence, I think, was just such a stabilizer for this team that allowed them to really use all of their talents that they had at their disposal and go out there and make it count in the standings.
Yeah, Caleb, I feel like a lot of people, again, before this season, kind of criticized the lack of panic nature from Brian Snicker and looked at him as almost being like someone who doesn't necessarily go rah-rah and throw chairs around. But I think it's that calm demeanor, it's that resilient demeanor that's the key and reason why the Braves are sitting in the position that they are.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things where he's willing to do things that would be seem like, you know, unorthodox otherwise. Him being willing to, you know, move Freddie up to the two hole and kind of figure things out, you know, right behind with Ozuna, and then whether it was, you know, Darnold or Duvall or whatever it was, of just taking Freddie out of that, you know, his standard spot or whatever, and did it in a what I would say is like a young person's way. He just sent Freddie a text. There was no, like you know, I mean, for
you're hitting second.
Yeah, but it's one of those things I would tend to think, based on Brian Snicker is closer to my grandparents' age than he is my age, and they don't text, really. So, you know, so I would think of, you know, Snit making a phone call and, you know, yeah, Freddie, you know, I think based on this, you know, well, we're gonna move you up in the lineup. But it was like, nope, just send a text, you know. But it was just like those little things, like, it's not a big deal. This is what we're gonna do. This is how we're gonna handle the different situations as they present to us. And by the time you get to the end of the season, you know, I mean, there's one more series, but the Braves lead their closest opponent in the division by 5 games. So without a true starting rotation, I mean, they've been piecemeal and stuff together. So yes, I would like to take the moment and, you know, become a little fond and appreciate the 60-game season before we head into this playoffs that could go a plethora of ways.
Speaking of that 60-game season, how did you guys enjoy the? I mean, it's not over technically, but how did you enjoy the 60 games? Did it make you feel any different as you were kind of tracking the season?
As somebody who was the biggest proponent of a 60-game season, you, Joe Patrick, I feel like I like it better than 162, but I don't like it so much to where I want it to be the norm. I feel like if you took half of that, if you made it 112, I'd feel like that's enough. Because I get to the 100 game point of a regular season normally, and I think we kind of know who people are at that point. Like we know who's good by that point. We don't need 162 to determine what happens. And we talked about this a little bit last week. Look, I don't want the current mode of the postseason to be what rings out. But I also feel like the problem that a lot of people are going to have going into next season is you are going to have some fatigue. You are going to have some of the people who are more new age, who want things to be, you know, more instant gratification, who are going to want more playoffs. And you're taking away, I think Bob Costas said this on a podcast with Jason Stark of The Athletic, and he said, you're taking away what makes baseball great when you do things like that. And I feel like that's the part of it that I think you're going to lose a lot of people. And again, I know that baseball goes through this periodically. Anytime there's a change, you don't want to offend your core fan base, mortgage that with the risk of trying to pick up others. The way you pick up others is by making the game inside of it more compelling, not any shortening or lengthening of the season or shortening or lengthening of the postseason. I feel like if you're going to make baseball better, it needs to be something done in terms of the pace of play inside the actual game.
Yeah.
Now, there have been some rules that have tried to contribute to that, but I do feel like there's still more that can be done to speed up the pace of play in terms of that, so that it isn't a game that drags so much. I mean, we had games during this season, guys, where we're 2 hours and not even in the fourth or fifth inning. Like that, if there's one thing that this season exacerbated, it's the need for more crackdown on pace of play rules.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you about, yeah, if you want to change it, you can't really change the season. I mean, it's just too much of a change. I enjoyed the 60-game season. It's not something I would want every year, you know. It was just a kind of a nice change of pace, and it gave a different tenor to the season because we experienced it. I'm sure I'm not the only one who, you know, after the Braves lose 3 games in a row or something, it feels like you're on the edge of a catastrophe about to happen, just because you know how valuable those games are and how kind of, you know, close the standings can shrink down, you know, leads and things like that in the standings when you lose 3 games in a row like that, like you wouldn't normally be worried about in a normal season. So I enjoyed it. I would like I think if there was any kind of one structural change that was made this season that I would like to see stick around is the 7-inning doubleheaders. I thought those were great.
Yes, absolutely agreed.
Yeah, as far as like the 60 games, I guess the length of it didn't bother me as much as the compactness of the season that became, and it's one of those, as someone doing this podcast, this is a baseball podcast, you know, like we're supposed to love the sport.
Yeah.
But I found myself just like, good grief, another game. I've gone that first stretch where I think we were supposed to go 20 games, and I think we ended up only going like 17 or 18 because of a rainout or something.
Yeah.
But it was one of those, you know, just having those nightly interactions with my wife where she's like, oh, Braves are on again? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I got those. I can identify with those interactions.
Yeah, so it's one of those that just, and COVID or not, I kind of got into a nightly routine of things that I like to do before we had baseball, and then it showed up, and it was there every single day, and then it obviously presented problems when teams had COVID cases or whatever, and you know, I mean, the Marlins have just been the one thing, like, I, you know, I mean, they'll make the playoffs or whatever, but they aren't the best team, but just the fact that they were able to deal with as many games as they missed and still make the postseason, like, they were still those storylines that we're used to seeing in a full season. I'm with Will, and if I remember correctly, back at the beginning when we were starting this podcast, I was a proponent of like 112 games, you know, somewhere around that number, just because the 162, it seemed that in that stretch past the summer and before the playoffs, that it just started to drag. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems like it does that every year. And so maybe being able to shorten that would bring, I don't know, just more eyeballs and would keep the focus a little bit longer. But overall, yes, as far as this particular specific season goes, you know, when you want to talk about legitimacy and all of those things that we were concerned about at the beginning of the season.
Seems like so long ago, yeah.
Yeah, completely legitimate season.
Totally, yep.
Yes, you know, great ideas came from it. Like you said, seven-inning games, seven-inning doubleheaders. I would push for seven-inning games, but I've also heard... I've heard baseball... You know, people who are smarter in baseball than me say that really would shift the game with starting pitching and all that kind of stuff. And so I like, okay, I'll take seven inning doubleheaders at least. And it, you know, I think we've gotten a really entertaining product on the field throughout this 60 game season.
I'll say this about shortening the season. I don't want to say it's never going to happen, but...
Oh, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. It's got to happen on the owner's terms, and it's got to happen in a way that allows them to still make the kind of money that they make at the gate. Because we talked about this before the season even started. The baseball revenues are as dependent on the gate as any of the major sports, with the exception of maybe Major League Soccer. And again, that's only for the particular teams like Atlanta who actually draw a sizable amount. And so from the standpoint of baseball, they make that gate, a lot of that with the season ticket holders, and they make a lot of that gate before the season. And so will you still be able to make that much of a sizable dent in your revenue stream before the season? Will people still want to buy season tickets if the price goes up per game because you have less of them? And I think that's that old scarcity property of economics that really kind of kicks into the full gear there. I'm wondering if it'd be the same type of situation if, say, the number was 140 or 120 or whatever it had to be in order to maximize the type of eyeballs and really put more of a spotlight on the postseason. And it'll be interesting to see if any of those type of discussions come up as part of the next collective bargaining agreement, which we have about a year from now.
Collective bargaining agreement. Right?
Yeah, I get it.
On the background.
That's the thing. But that's the whole big part of it, is that we've all kind of been in this little 2-month area of collected bliss. You know, I've got 3 screens sitting in my living room right now. You know, 2 of them are usually on baseball and one's on another sport. I mean, we're in this nice, great overload nirvana of sports. But there are real world issues that we're going to have to deal with when it comes to the sporting world, and especially in baseball, come this time next year, because let's be real, it's not as if that acrimony between the Major League Baseball owners and the players all of a sudden disappeared into thin air. Like,
Sure. I'm just saying that I'm a procrastinator, and so I don't like to think about that.
And I even think about this, and I hate to bring a cross-sport comparison, and this is a little bit different, but there was an article done by ESPN on the NHL's bubble. Greg Wyshynski, Emily Kaplan did an amazing expose talking to 9 anonymous players who played in the NHL who talked about the promises that were given and the things that they did not receive in terms of the amenities in the bubble. And I'm not saying that there's necessarily anything to that effect when it comes to Major League Baseball, but I wouldn't be shocked if something similar came out in that form or fashion when it comes to baseball, with guys talking candidly about how this year went. And while people talk about it in glowing matters now, and if you're a champion, you're going to talk about it in even more glowing matters as a result of that, I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to see similar types of comments made by players, and you're seeing it right now. Joe, you mentioned it last night. We were talking about Andrelton Simmons, who opted out with just 5 days left of the season for the Angels. Guys, unless there's a payoff that comes with postseason and things of that nature, I think a lot of players kind of felt like, I don't want to say it was a sham, but I do feel like some questioned the legitimacy of doing this and like, why are we doing this every day for, again, what was ended up being 40% of our promised salary. I think there's still a little bit of that acrimony that exists in baseball's underbelly, even though a lot of it's being shadowed right now by the good feelings that we have with sports being back.
Yeah, I think we'll hear some of that. I think we'll hear some of the complaining as well from the bubble.
To be the naysayer and then the negative Nelly of the group. I'm just saying.
I mean, let's be honest. Bubbles suck. Like, I mean, they're great for keeping out coronavirus, but like as a living as a healthy, physically healthy human being, they can help you live healthier, but they're not a good place to be in. You know, like you'd rather not be in that situation. So I definitely expect it to be kind of I think it'll be a shock to the system for a lot of these players.
Yeah, and I've been a guy big time against this MLB playoff bubble, just because like what other league just does this right at the postseason? Like, hey, you've been playing one way all season. We're gonna completely switch it up on you. And then Joe, you know, as you were saying, the bubble is the only good thing that it is good for is to keep coronavirus out. And I listened to some of the commissioner's comments about things that he wants to happen in this bubble, and I'm like, doesn't sound like a bubble to me. Sounds like you are trying to, you know, show off your newest facility in the league.
Right.
But, you know.
Right. Yeah. I know. You know? It's like. Right, as we've talked about this whole time, it's like the bubble's only as tight as you make it. You know,
you can
allow all kinds of vulnerabilities, and then it's not a bubble.
I say I know basically the footprint of where the Braves would have to go if they end up staying in that LDS, and they will basically in the LDS. They probably play in Houston. Is a situation where they're going to be right downtown and within walking distance of the ballpark, and that's basically it. I mean, you got a couple of nice hotels down there, but you're basically going to be told, hey, hotel ballpark. That's it.
Well, and I think one of the things that people listening need to understand is it's easy to go, well, the NBA did this and MLS did this and WNBA did this. And it's like, no. They did it from the beginning. So there was a routine built in. There were, you know, people got used to the lifestyle being without their families, and you just somewhat they were building up this tolerance, whether they were hiding things on the inside, at least on the outside, you know, they had, like I said, built some form of tolerance. So to push this now in the postseason where you've been playing one way, you've been around your family as much as, you know, you're comfortable with or whatever. To switch this up now, I think it's going to bring about a totally different product because of how some teams will adapt to it. Some teams will struggle. You're playing in a ballpark. If you're the Braves, you haven't all season. And you know, all of these just little things, I think, were just completely looked over for the owners and Commissioner Rob Manfred going, we got to get that playoff money by any means necessary.
I mean, either of these stadiums, Caleb, you know, they haven't played in Houston in a while, I don't think, and they've never played in the New Arlington building.
Yeah, so that's great. That's great. If you make the World Series, we're going to stick you in a stadium you've never seen before. And that's how baseball is played, right? Yeah?
Well, no? Hey, I mean...
Not to mention I feel salty about the Arlington building because they did not need to tear down the other building, but that's just my own separate soapbox.
To kind of tie this back to the Braves, I think, again, it comes back to what I was talking about earlier with what Brian Snicker said at the beginning of the season, which is that the teams that do the best in this season are going to be the ones that are able to adapt to the weird conditions of the season. And I think that the Braves, with the kind of young team that they have, the kind of... I don't want to like say that like the Braves players are like more humble than like players on another team, but they just seem to have shown themselves to be players this season who have been able to adapt to those conditions. So I would think that they would be able to cope with it all pretty well.
It's the right experience of youth and
it's a good blend.
Seasoning.
Well, and you've got the leaders on the team are guys like Freddie Freeman who really can kind of set the right tone for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and it is, you were talking about that humility. It's one of those that can become frustrating for media at times because, as I've joked about before, like Adam Duvall, one of the worst interviews ever, not because he's rude or anything, just because the day that he had the back-to-back three home run game and they're talking to him post-game press conference, they're like, media's drooling over themselves.
Bullpen did a great job.
Yeah, you know, they're like, I mean, you've gotta realize this is an incredible feat, just never been done before. And Adam's like, yeah, you know, and Freddie, when he got 1,500 hits, he's like, Bat Boy told me, and I'm like, oh good, now I can get this out of the way. Like, you know. Focus on the team. And it's like, and it's genuine. Like, this is not a, oh, I got to feed this to the media so they will paint me in a certain way.
And Alex Anthopoulos, to his credit, he has always said from day one, when he talks about bringing in players, he talks about their player profile. And of course, that includes their attributes, what they're good at, how they can fill roles that the team needs. But part of that player profile is how they're going to fit into the Braves clubhouse. And you got to give him credit. I think Brian Snicker gets a lot of credit for this as well, for like being the guy who's the captain of the ship, kind of keeping everybody a steady Eddie. But Alex Anthopoulos sets it up so that Brian Snicker can succeed in doing that because he brings in players who are not going to rock the boat. Like, you know, I know that the Braves were kind of sniffing around Grandal, the catcher that went to the White Sox, but I don't think they were super impressed with the way he would have come in and kind of been a fit inside this locker room. And I thought that we've seen Travis d'Arnaud come in and fit like glue, you know, like just like the perfect fit for this team. And he's obviously, I think when you get a perfect fit like that with their characters, just people who will easily get along with each other, you'll see the performance on the field. And that's what we've seen from a guy like d'Arnaud. So I think you got to give Alex Anthopoulos a lot of credit for kind of building that, helping build that clubhouse chemistry that the Braves have.
While we're giving him credit, I do want to point out that one of his moves during the offseason gave us 3 1/3 innings of work for the entire season.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the other way, but
$6.7 million worth of nothing.
$128,000 per pitch.
He also signed a guy for a 1-year contract who could win a Triple Crown this year. Yep. So
yes, you're very true.
And as I was telling you guys in the group chat, because you know we were. To kind of like give the listeners a little peek in, we were talking about the Phillies GM not wanting to discuss any, you know, anything about his future with the club, which is just very awkward and super super uncomfortable. But
future at best.
But Phillies GM signed two players, JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper, two guys that Braves fans were dying for. And I was big one on Realmuto. My loathing of Bryce Harper being a rival and just his personality caused me to, I never wanted to see him play for the Braves. And a lot of Braves fans were willing to kind of put that to bed in order to have him play. But it's one of those were big money deals and it is not working out.
Yeah.
Well, again, you mentioned the team, but you didn't mention the guy that I wanted, and that was Zach Wheeler. And that's, I'm not saying Zach Wheeler turns everything over upside down, but I think it turns this rotation from, hey, maybe we can get by, to, oh my goodness, we can win a World Series. And I'm not saying you can't win a World Series, because I think this lineup is going to keep you in games. I'm going to say that right off the bat. I believe this lineup is going to keep you in games, because I don't think games are going to be played the way they usually are in October. I think it's going to be an extension of the regular season. It's something we've talked about over the course of the season. I feel like it is going to be an extension, and I think the point you made, Caleb, about the bubble being a different type of environment than we usually have, I think is going to contribute to that. The problem is that I believe, and again, this is just my own feeling, is that I feel like the organization is seeing certain positive signs that are going to make them try and once again try and cut a corner during this offseason when it comes to any type of starting pitching help for this team. And again, that's still in the offing. We still got to get through a postseason, but I do feel like you cannot cut corners. You have to go out and get a frontline starter at some point in this offseason because of the fact that the pitching that you've developed is not on the level that I think you need it to be in order to win a World Series with this group. It just isn't.
But go ahead, Joe.
Well, we were chatting about this last night. I'm glad we're kind of taking this topic up again, because I think it's really interesting, especially though I think it's really interesting the way that things have turned out for the Braves this year. And this is kind of not including Mike Fultonevich. To me, that's kind of a different story, where he was an established veteran that you were expecting something from that you didn't get.
Yeah, and Fulty was going to happen regardless of anything else.
Right.
Yes.
So clearly the strategy from the Braves front office this year was to kind of use Cole Hamels and a guy like Felix Hernandez to essentially be the bridge to kind of get you to some of these younger prospects, these younger starting pitching prospects that the Braves have, guys like that we've seen this year, Tuki Toussaint, Bryce Wilson, Kyle Wright, Ian Anderson, those types. The reason why I think what's happened is so interesting is because we've seen guys like hit or miss. Like Tuki Toussaint has not hit. He's shown flashes, but he's clearly like not shown himself to be a guy who you would want to put out there consistently. Sean Newcomb obviously was the same. He's kind of teetering on whether he's more in the Mike Fultonevich camp or these prospects camp. But Kyle Wright's now turning it around, but you got like a clear hit out of Ian Anderson. So all of this to say is I think that the Braves really, they were able to really get a definitive view of who some of these guys are. And I think they have a clear picture now because they had to throw these guys into the fire of what they have going forward in these guys. Like, they know what they have in Ian Anderson now. I think they're starting to probably, you know, gain more confidence in what Kyle Wright is. But they also, on the other side of the coin, they know what Tuki Toussaint is. They know what Sean Newcomb is, probably a bullpen arm, that kind of thing. So I think that they were able to clarify some of those starting pitching roles and some of those prospects that they have in the pipeline. And I think that that will help them going forward. And I will be interested to see, to Will's point, whether they are willing to invest more long term in a starting pitcher now that they kind of have a better idea of how all these stable of prospects are going to shake out.
Yeah, that's why, to kind of piggyback off of Joe, that's why I, unlike Will, I'm not that upset based on them like not pulling the trigger on a big, you know, like a Zach Wheeler or something like that in the offseason. That's why I was furious at the trade deadline that there weren't, you know, the Mike Clevinger deal wasn't done, because
you assume like they are, like they had that evaluation at that point and they could have used that knowledge at that point to understand what they had and build a.
Yeah, like it definitely seemed rather transparent at spring training what the plan was, like you said, of getting these young arms ready, and then if, say, Felix doesn't work out, or if Cole, you know, took a little bit longer to get his injury, you know, right, like it ended up being, you had those young arms that you could kind of see, and maybe you get an Anibal Sanchez season out of Felix Hernandez. Unfortunately, those things didn't happen, and you were having to bring guys sooner than you wanted to, and you were able to see results faster than you probably normally would have, and giving guys a much shorter leash. That's why I was just so frustrated at the deadline. I don't know that there's that you know, quote-unquote frontline starter going to be available this offseason. I mean, the names that I've seen, to me, seems like a three at best as far as where you would put.
It's Bauer and a bunch of scraps is really what it is. It's Tanaka.
Which means Bauer is going to get paid.
You're
not getting Bauer.
I don't think Atlanta's the kind of team that's going to pay an aging starting pitcher like that. You know, it was one of those. Quite honestly, I thought before the injury, the Tommy John thing was announced this past week, I thought Justin Verlander was like prime candidate to be Atlanta Braves starter in 2021 just based on the moves that they made in the past. Obviously, now that's not going to happen, so maybe he'll be Braves starter 2022 or retire. I don't see that big move being made in the offseason once again. We're probably going to come back once again next season and be frustrated.
I will just say, I think the Braves have a pretty interesting, good-looking rotation next year. When you talk about Mike Soroka, Max Fried, Ian Anderson as being your 1-2-3, I don't think they have huge holes to fill, despite the fact that it's been such a trouble spot for them this year. I think that if you're the Braves, you kind of like the position you're in, and you can try to you don't have to kind of really, really take huge gambles there to really solidify that rotation next year.
I want one more guy. That's just my
I'm opinion. With you. I'm with you.
You can never have too many starting, you know, too many.
As we found out this year, we can never have too many. we will take a larger look into who exactly the Braves are playing once we figure that out on Monday's edition of Batter Up. The series will go from Wednesday until Friday. We're still figuring out our coverage plans as far as that goes, but once we do, we will share them with you in our social media, not just at 92.9 The Game, but also at Willie P Style, at JA Patrick 200, and at ATL Johnson 18. Hope everybody enjoy the podcast and be happy. The Braves are back in the postseason, third consecutive year with a division title, to play an opponent to be determined. Right now, if the season ended today, it'd be the Reds, but a lot of jockeying could change from now until the end of the season on Sunday. We say so long until then. For Joe Patrick, Caleb Johnson, Willie P. here.